Well, if there was a vaccine against cancer, wouldn't you get it for your kids? Nationally, only 4 of 10 adolescent girls and 6 out of 10 adolescent boys, all those guys haven't started the human papillomavirus vaccine series, and they're vulnerable to cancers caused by HPV infections. The worst news? Kansas and Missouri have 2 of the lowest HPV vaccination rates in the nation. A new study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that prevalence of HPV has been dropping since recommendations went into effect a decade ago. UpToDate is starting today a series on child development, and we'll visit with Dr. Barbara Pahud about the HPV vaccine and why it's taken so long to catch on. And Doctor, so good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us for our series is Dr. Natasha Burgert. She's a physician with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. She's also the local spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Natasha, good to have you again. Welcome back.
Great to be back. Thanks, Steve.
Dr. Pahud, what is the HPV vaccine?
The HPV vaccine is a wonderful discovery. I remember 10, 15 years ago, we used to say, wouldn't it be great if we had a cancer vaccine? And just like you said, now here it is. It's basically the outside of the virus. Imagine you have an Amazon box that you ordered all this stuff full of goodies. The virus inside of the box basically has all the mechanisms to produce infection. That's what's inside the box. The vaccine is just the box with nothing inside of it. So your body sees the box and recognizes it as the virus and produces antibodies that protect you. But the beauty is there's nothing inside, so it can't give you cancer. It can't give you an actual infection. It's just the box. So it's one of the most successful vaccines that have been produced.
Well, how can we have a vaccine for this kind of cancer but not have them for so many other kinds of cancers?
It's very difficult to create vaccines, and each virus has its own little tweak of why it's difficult. This one is a very successful vaccine because they were able to create this box without the contents, and it's very immunogenic. What that means is your body produces a very good response against it. It's even more immunogenic than the infection itself, which is unheard of usually in the vaccine world. We tend to believe that if you have chickenpox yourself, that's better than you have the chickenpox vaccine. Mm-hmm. But in this case, with this vaccine, it's actually the opposite. If you look at natural infection rates of immunity and then you compare that to people that have been vaccinated fully, they are better protected with a vaccine.
Well, this vaccination, what type of cancer does it wind up preventing?
That's a great question. I'm so happy you asked that. So HPV is responsible for cancers of the cervix in women, and that's the one that most people are aware of. So the big majority of cervical cancer, of course, is caused by HPV. But there's various types of HPV that can cause this type of infection, various types of them. They have numbers attached to them, 16, 18. And the vaccine will protect against cervical cancers with the serotype 16 and 18, but it also protects against oropharyngeal cancers. About 3/4 of all oropharyngeal cancers in the world are responsible because of HPV, basically. Mm-hmm. And the vaccine can also protect against those cancers. And there's other cancers also, like vulval, penile, anal cancers, other types of cancers that can also be protected with the vaccine. But the two most important ones for women, cervical cancer and oropharyngeal, and for men, oropharyngeal, like the cancer that Michael Douglas had, basically.
Mm. Well, Natasha, we're sitting here talking about cancer. We're using the C word a lot, and I'm wondering, given that, why in the world are some people hesitating to get care for it through a vaccination?
Now, that's a great question, and I think that that's one where all of our doctors, all of us in the physician community are kind of shaking our heads. We're getting increasing evidence of its safety. We continue to get increasing evidence that this is really working, that it is decreasing HPV load in the children that we're protecting, which is super important. But I think one of the main problems is simply awareness. And for parents to understand truly what HPV disease is in order to make that choice for their children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, doctor. Yeah.
I think part of the problem is, unfortunately, not just parents, but physicians don't understand the burden of HPV, meaning everybody in their life at some point will be infected with HPV, the vast majority of the world population.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you've gotten HPV, most likely you will be able to take care of that infection on your own. Most of us have. But a small proportion of people will not be able to handle that infection, and they will move on to have cancer. So that sounds like it's not a very big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about the fact that the entire world will be infected with HPV, even if only 1 or 5% of those people get cancer, that is a huge burden.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think people fail to understand, and they just think it's something that doesn't affect them.
Well, I know our parents are going to have lots of questions about this who are listening, and let me get them involved here. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this vaccination. Has your child been immunized or have you avoided it? We'd like to know why. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up To Date. Doctor, go ahead.
Something else I wanted to talk about is the reason why parents fail to vaccinate, I think, is because they believe, number one, parents want to do what's best for their children.
Of course.
So do we.
Yeah.
So they believe they don't want to expose their children to a vaccine that could potentially be harmful if their child is not at risk of that disease.
Mm-hmm.
That's what parents believe, and they think they're doing what's best. What we know, however, is that HPV, like I said, will be an infection that you will have. The time that you start sexual intercourse usually correlates very well with your time of getting infection with HPV. But what's very important for people to know is that HPV infection can be found in virgins. So we do not want to wait until somebody has been exposed to HPV to vaccinate them. We need to do that prior to the infection.
Well, Natasha, you know, I know some parents out there are thinking, hey, if you get kids vaccinated, is that going to make them more prone to sexual activity? Are we starting something moving here that we want to avoid?
And that is absolutely not true. And I think what we need to also remember is this is not the first vaccine that most parents are getting for their kids against sexually transmitted diseases. Most of our kids are also protected against hepatitis B, which we do as young infants, clearly before sexual activity. And this is another, not only a sexually transmitted infection, but also a cancer-causing vaccine. So I think HPV is our second opportunity to talk about these infections with our kids. What I'm finding practically in the clinic is that an 11-year-old, which is typically the age that we start giving the vaccine, they don't ask too many questions about what the vaccine is, to be quite honest. They know that they're going to get a shot. That's what they're stressed out about. And so the conversation around the vaccine really just needs to be centered around, this is a vaccine that's going to keep your body healthy. It's protecting you against a disease that you're likely going to see in your life, and we're going to do it today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the extent of the conversation.
Dr. Bahoud, yeah.
So the vaccine is approved by the FDA to be given down to age 9. So I want to clarify that so that if some parents have concerns about racing that with their 11 or 12-year-old, you can avoid that altogether and start giving the vaccine at age 9.
Are you doing that?
I am absolutely recommending that. And what I will tell you, which is even more important, is not just what I'm asking parents, but what I'm doing myself. I have a daughter and she will receive it at age 9.
Mm-hmm.
So at age 9, you are less likely to have ever seen HPV in your life. And when you are basically not exposed to that, the vaccine will respond much better. So it's kind of like saying, if you've been exposed to measles and then I give you the vaccine after the exposure, it's not going to work that well.
Mm-hmm.
You need it way before an outbreak. So that's why we try to immunize before you're ever exposed. So if you think about it that way, we want to give HPV vaccine the younger the better. And regarding to your sexual activity question, there's been studies done by Kaiser Permanente where they have followed girls that got the HPV vaccine and girls that didn't. And then they tracked down how many pregnancies, how many sexual transmitted diseases they've had. And there's been absolutely no difference. If anything, maybe even the girls that got the vaccine, in my opinion, tend to have parents that are more involved and who protect them and who are more informed about safe practices, sexual practices, and do better off down the road.
The HPV vaccine is what we're talking about here today. Parents, give us your thoughts on it. What are your questions? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up To Date. Well, Kansas and Missouri have two of the lowest HPV vaccination rates in the country, Natasha. Why?
I wish I knew. I think
that's a hard question.
It is a hard question, yeah. And it's one that, as a person who really believes in the safety and the effectiveness of the vaccine, and living in this community, I think that us as physicians need to do a better job in talking to our children about it and our patients about it. And not only within the pediatric sector, I've also had conversations with people in internal medicine and OB/GYN, other physician groups that need to get on board and start to protect these women and men.
Let's go to some phone calls again, 816-235-2888. Jane from Kansas City, Missouri. Jane, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, thank you. One question I have is about age, and the other is a more specific question. I haven't got my children vaccinated with that yet, but I want to, but they're almost 15 and 14, son and a daughter. Is it too late at that time?
Great question.
The other one, more specific, is my children are adopted, and the birth family, it was a really bad situation. My daughter was raped when she was little, so she could have been exposed to this already. Is it too late?
Dr. Pahood, is it too late at 14 and 15?
It is never too late. This is a right recommendation. The ideal time is to complete the series before the age of 13, but it is indicated to be given all the way up to age even 26. So in children who have been sexually abused, it's actually a recommendation from the CDC to start at 9, even though I say that as well, and it is okay to start at 9. They emphasize to start as early as possible in children who've been sexually abused.
Okay, Jane, I hope that helps. Let's go to Mark from Prairie Village. Mark, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. My now 17-year-old junior in high school started the series when she was 12 years old. My wife, her stepmom, is a pharmacist and basically did all of the digging and said, you know, I see absolutely no downside to this. And when we think of all of the complications that could possibly come from HPV and from cervical cancer down the road, she says, of course, this is just the natural thing to do. Interestingly enough, though, my daughter's mom, who also works in the medical field, was really against it for a short period of time because there is so much out there in the way of information and misinformation about the vaccine. Mm. So once we could all get on the same page with the information that we were reading, we could make a decision together as a family. But it was a little bit of a challenge at the beginning.
Misinformation, Natasha, how big of an issue, how big of a hurdle is that for you as a doctor?
No, I love that comment, Mark, because I think it expresses a lot of experiences that many families are having. And the significance of that misinformation is huge. It misdirects parents and it confuses them. And I love the end of Mark's story, how he leaned into experts, he leaned into each other to make that decision as a family. And that's what I would encourage any other families who are struggling with this decision to find a trusted expert to lean into.
Barbara?
I want to take the opportunity to say that if I thought the question was going to be she started at 12 and then didn't complete. So for those parents out there, you do not have to start over. If you got one dose, you can complete the series at any point that you want. So do not feel bad if you're out there listening and thinking, oh, I started and now we're going to have to start over. You do not. Just go to your doctor, finish the doses, and you will be fine.
How many shots are we talking about?
These are 3 shots, and the usual interval is you get it, and then at the second dose after 1 or 2 months, that's what we call priming. This is important to understand because your immune system sees something for the first time, starts to develop immunity, and then 6 months later, you give it a booster. So to boost up the immunity after you've been primed to that antigen. So the reasoning behind this 0, 1 to 2, 6 is you prime with the first dose and you boost 6 months later.
Do kids typically have any trouble adjusting to these shots? Is there an aftermath or after effects here?
Yeah, so most teenagers may pass out, have syncope after vaccination. It's not specific to HPV. It's specific to needles. So if you draw blood, if you stick them with something, they are going to faint. This is just something that teenagers do. So the number one side
effect.
Nothing
to do with the vaccination itself. itself.
Not the vaccine, it's the needle. I think you could inject them, you know, water, and they're still going to have more episodes of syncope than children or adults. It's just what they do. So what we do want to be aware of is you can't send your teen, get the vaccine, and have them drive home. You should probably make sure that they're laying down for the first 15 to 20 minutes, watch them, and then if they feel okay, they can leave.
Mm-hmm. And we do that for most of our kids in the office. We have them chill out with us for a little bit before they go home, just because we know that is associated not only with HPV, but also when kids even come in to get their tetanus shots. So,
Mark, I hope that helps. Okay, let's go on here. Let's go to Eli from Olathe. Eli, welcome to Up to Date.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I just had a quick two-part question. I have a six-year-old daughter, and my wife and I certainly consider the HPV vaccine when she comes of age to receive it. But the questions I have are, one, I know that you mentioned, or it was mentioned, that there could potentially be exposure to the HPV virus even without sexual activity. I was curious maybe what sources could contribute to that exposure. And then the second part of my question was really just around if someone does have prior exposure and they are vaccinated. I know you mentioned that the vaccine would not be as effective, and was curious if you ever perform or recommend any type of titer testing to identify immunity prior to vaccination.
How about that second question first, Barbara?
We do not recommend testing anybody prior. If you are in the recommended ages of getting the vaccine, you should get it. And statistically speaking, just because we've done the studies, we know that you can get vaccinated at this time and that the vaccine's going to be very effective.
Mm-hmm. What about this idea that if it's not through sexual contact, how can you develop this?
It's something that researchers are still looking into, but what I can tell you, and I know Kansas City loves baseball, so we talk about first base, second base, third base. Basically, whenever your child starts playing baseball, that's how we think the exposures happen. Mm-hmm. Now, the bigger load of the exposure you can imagine, of course, is when there's intercourse. Mm-hmm. And that's when they usually will clearly be more exposed to HPV, but any activity prior can definitely produce infection.
I don't want to get too graphic here, but are we talking third base? Is that where we're
first,
talking issues here?
Second.
First and second,
yes.
Too.
And
the whole cycle. You're hitting for the cycle here. You're playing baseball. You're asking for it.
And
okay.
We don't even know if there's other type of activities that also expose you to HPV. We do know that we have found it in virgins, so that's why we know this happens.
Yeah, you
but
said that.
Could it also be that, for example, girls go to a sleepover and they share underwear, and that's how it gets passed on? We're still not sure. We know HPV can live in fomites, basically in clothing material, but it's still unclear what is the exact mechanism. Just like with hepatitis B, with Natasha brought up earlier, that's another cancer-preventing vaccine, and we just don't know why some children acquire hepatitis B if they don't have anybody in their household who has it. So the best thing we can do is just immunize them early, because since you don't know when they're going to be exposed to it, just get them protected.
I think I'd like to see a study done on why kids would share underwear. I don't understand that.
I've had too many slumber parties in my house. I think I can tell you.
Okay, we'll talk about that off air. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here if you want to join our conversation here as we talk about the HPV vaccine. Lots of questions. It's an important issue. Again, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Let's go to Gary from Ottawa on the Kansas side. Gary, welcome to Up to Date. Nice to have you.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I would just like to say the danger that this woman is posing on the air. And I'd like to back it up with just a little bit of evidence. And I hope people do their research before they have this massive neurological damaging vaccine put in their children, their daughters. The vaccine adverse event reporting systems clearly have documented just the number of individuals that have been reported. The number of girls, these 84 young girls, just in this one documentation, all right, by the District of Columbia specifically, have reported massive neurological issues due to this Gardasil vaccine. We're not talking about Gardasil, but that is what this lady is pushing. It's so maddening. Mm-hmm. The Gillian syndrome issues that come out of this vaccine, it's so dangerous. The chances of this virus actually doing any damage to their children long term is outweighed by the massive amount of damage that this billion-dollar corporation wants to make off a portion of it back to you.
Gary, I appreciate that. I'm going to get a comment here from Barbara. Why don't you respond to what Gary has to say? I'm sure you've heard this before.
Absolutely. This is one of the most common concerns that parents may have about various side effects that they believe are associated with the vaccine. So I have multiple things to say. Number one, in the United States alone, there's been over 60 million doses administered. So we do have various mechanisms to ensure that a vaccine is safe. VAERS, which he talked about, this Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, is one of three mechanisms that we use to ensure that vaccines are safe. Mm-hmm. I was a vaccine safety fellow at the CDC, so I understand how vaccines are looked at for safety. VAERS is a mechanism where anyone can call, a parent, a lawyer. Lawyers are the number one callers to VAERS, a physician, a nurse, and report a vaccine adverse event. Now, let's say you get vaccine today, and then you fall off and you break your leg. You could call and say, I broke my leg after vaccination, and that will forever be in the VAERS repository. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it was caused. You just report it. So reporting an event to VAERS does not mean causality. It just means I felt like I wanted to report it, and you do that. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is in place. This is a mechanism for the public to report anything and everything that they want so that we on the other side can see if there's a signal on it. Mm-hmm. Now, there's other two mechanisms, however, that are more rigorous in how we do research, the VSD, Vaccine Safety Data Link, and CISA. The VSD is how they did those studies that I told you where you immunize children with HPV and then children who don't are not immunized, and then you do data mining to see how many of them got pregnancies, how many of them had this. So we can do very good studies, clean, perfect scientific studies saying, if you grab a cohort of girls vaccinated and not vaccinated, and you compare them over time, and you see how many of these developed neurological things, and how many of these did not, comparing the vaccinated versus the not, and we have noticed no safety signals of any child vaccinated with HPV that developed adverse events that the girls who were not vaccinated did not receive.
Yeah, you know, I'm just wondering, Natasha, this whole notion of vaccinations has picked up, whether it should or not, this a little bit of a stigma over the years. And I'm wondering, as a doctor, how do you combat that? How do you deal with that sort of week in and week out?
No, I mean, I'm on the front lines. I'm a general pediatrician. I see patients every day. And I think any physician that's part of this community to give vaccinations listens to these concerns very seriously. We want patients and parents to be able to be very comfortable with the decisions that we make. I clearly do not make any monetary gains by giving any vaccines. I don't do that. And these are vaccines that
Does any doctor?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also when I take off my doctor hat and I put on my mom hat, I really think that when those of us that are in pediatrics specifically, we care for children.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would be able in any good conscience of my own to be able to recommend a vaccine that I wouldn't give to my own children.
Yeah.
And not only me, but super specialists, the people at the CDC, they're all parents. And I think it would be very hard-pressed to have a significant conspiracy with all of those parents who are trying to do this to protect children.
And to give even more reassurance to the public, if some of you remember, there was a vaccine called RotaShield that was actually pulled from the market.
Sure.
So that's how to prove to you that the vaccine safety mechanism that's in place works. When we see a vaccine that is harming children, we do something about it. The MMRV vaccine that was given to children 1 year of age, it was noticed that it caused more seizures in that age group than in the 4 years old, and then a recommendation was made not to do that. So I have many examples of when we actually react to this. And if we knew that the vaccine was causing harm, nobody would be giving this vaccine.
You know, what does the HPV vaccination cost? And, you know, is it typically covered by insurance? And if it's not, what does it cost? What are we talking about here?
We have no problems with people getting it covered by insurance. It's around $120, I believe, if you pay out of pocket. But I honestly don't know their current data because it is covered. We also know that if there's challenges to insurance coverage, you can get it very inexpensively at the health department.
Is it made by more than one drug manufacturer, or does someone have a corner on the market?
There's two different manufacturers that are making it. One is only approved for girls. That's the Cervarix, and it's easy to remember because it has the word cervix in it. Yeah. And so boys cannot get that. For boys, you can only get the HPV Gardasil product. There's two products from Gardasil, the HPV-4, that means it has four HPV types, and the new HPV-9, which has nine serotypes in it. The reason why they went from the 4 to the 9 is to protect more against cervical cancer.
Let's go to Adija from Overland Park. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Thank you so much for the subject.
Sure.
For taking my call. I'm calling because I have two daughters that are of age, one that just turned 9 and one that's turning 11 tomorrow. And my question is there something that should parents with children who have pre-existing conditions have any concerns? One of my daughters has type 1 diabetes.
And
I can take my answer off the call.
Yeah, Adija, thank you very much. This notion of pre-existing conditions, diabetes, yeah.
So anybody that is potentially immunocompromised in any ways should absolutely get the vaccine. And they should try to do it always prior to being immunosuppressed. So there's other kids that may get medications that make them immunosuppressed. But in the case of diabetes, absolutely it's indicated.
Let's go to Samantha from Olathe. Samantha, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about the HPV vaccine. Good morning.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to comment. I am a certified nurse midwife that's now a stay-at-home mom, and I cannot thank you enough for this topic. I actually overheard two moms talking about this vaccine yesterday at the gym and talking about how it causes menopause and how people have died from it and just all of this false information that they were, you know, speaking to each other. So I appreciate the information. Secondly, is a question. At a conference I attended a couple years ago, they talked about perhaps needing another injection down the road if you get your three-part series, and then maybe 10 years later when you're in college, needing another injection to help increase your levels. Have you guys talked about that, or do you have any information about that?
Barbara?
Yes, so the vaccine, fortunately, is very immunogenic. It's actually one of the most immunogenic vaccines that we have created. And so far, we have data only as far out as the vaccine has existed, if that makes sense. So we have 10 years of data, and so far, the data looks excellent. We can tell, for example, with other vaccines, when immunity wanes, meaning you start losing that protection over time, and then you need a booster. With HPV, the protection with a three-dose series 10 years out is still better than natural infection. So no booster for now, but this may change as more data comes through.
One more call here from Allison from Kansas City, Missouri. Allison, good morning.
Hi. My question is, if you contract this virus, what kind of symptoms would you have? Would you even know that you have it?
Yeah, Natasha.
Yeah, this is an asymptomatic infection for most people. Unless you physically see genital warts, for example, which at this point it's too late, most people don't know they have it. And that's why it's so pervasive, and that's why, you know, 90% of the public is going to have HPV someday.
Okay. Allison, I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. I want to thank our great experts here as we have this had this good conversation today. Dr. Natasha Burgert is with the Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. Dr. Barbara Pahood is also an expert here talking about the HPV vaccine. Appreciate your time very much. Natasha, we'll see you again sometime soon, okay?
Sounds great.
Thank you.